and welcome to the Trash Tapes Podcast as part of the Enigmatic Productions Network. If you love bad cinema and incredible deep dives into cult film, then you have come to the right place. So if you like what you hear and want to support us, you can do so by donating some funds to our Buy Me a Coffee website, along with the Acast supporter feature. All of these can be found in the description below. And now, on with the show.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
I wasn't expecting it to have such weird internet issues on both ends. I feel like it's a little bit on me, a little bit on you. I feel like maybe just Sundays are just shit for internet.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I did a connection test, and the connection test came out good. So there's nothing wrong with the actual internet connection. So I don't know what was going on.
It happens. I don't know. Sometimes, you know, this is the thing I never understand about the internet. It's like sometimes there's peaks where it's really good. Got the music again.
This makes everything sound triumphant that you say, if you have that under it.
God damn it. I'm going to fight internet lag.
You are about to experience trash cinema.
Oh my.
And welcome to another episode of The Trash Tapes, where one man's trash is another man's treasure. I'm your host, Johan Chapul, and the Inflictor of Pain, and I'm joined by my victim and DJ, Edward Harvey. How are you doing?
I'm very well, mate. How are you doing?
Doing pretty well, actually. Although, admittedly, I have not left the house yet, even though now apparently everyone can go out and have a pint. And I'm not lying. I'm craving pints, but everyone out there looks like the zombie apocalypse right now. Everyone really is clamoring for alcohol right now.
Yeah, it's like I don't know. It's a pint, but with a sort of bad sort of like addition to it, like a death pint. Do you want the death pint?
Yeah, it's like saying, do you risk your health or do you want to get laid and bladdered? Who knows? We'll figure it out.
But it tends to be all the morons at the moment, so maybe we could filter them out.
Oh dear, are we calling this a purge? Let's not call it a purge, it's terrible. But yeah, it's kind of a purge, isn't it? But this is another thing I've been missing. There's one other thing I've been missing. This is summer, right? And speaking of pubs and everything else, you know, we'll go out for the summer. But one of the things I used to love a lot before COVID-19 put a halt on cinemas properly is all the summer blockbusters.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, often like superheroes and stuff, isn't it? So
yeah, Marvel and DC always seem to launch out most of their movies around this time.
Yeah.
So I said to myself, you know what? Let's I miss that. So let's watch a superhero movie for the episode. I'm not entirely sure this was the best idea, but we have decided to go for one that I remember as a kid, but only faintly. But I used to see the poster all the time in video stores. All the time I used to see this poster. And that one is Captain America, the 1990 version of it.
Get your guinea pig.
He happens to be the best damn candidate out of 600 volunteers.
A secret experiment gave one man the strength of 100.
For the rest of the world, he's just codenamed Captain America.
And the power to save millions.
The Jerrys have an experimental rocket ready to fire at a target somewhere in the United States.
Only he could defeat a superhuman madman.
I got a
fella called the Red Skull heading up their outfit.
But saving the world left him trapped in an icy grave until fate released him to finish a battle started decades ago. Ronnie Cox, Kim Gillingham, Scott Paulin as the Red Skull, and Matt Salinger as the Marvel Comics hero, Captain America.
Captain America 1990 edition. All right, so what's your do you have a history with this movie or not, just before we kick things off?
Well, I think, if I remember correctly, I think it was one of the superhero movies I suggested to you because I've got a lot of nostalgia attached to it. I went through a phase of, like, ever since I saw Batman 1989, I went through a phase of thinking, well, what other superhero movies are out there? I want to see him. And there was a craze after Batman 1989 kind of launched superhero movies, whether it was mainstream or in the B-movie circuit. And it was sort of like, there was a lot of movies that were coming just straight to video, and this was one of them. And I was just, when I was in, I was a big fan of the, I used to read the comic books, actually. The two main comic books I used to read as a kid were Captain America and Judge Dredd. So I also I also like the Transformer comics as well. Like all those things, I was like always looking for in the video shops and stuff. So like I saw Captain America in there, and I was like, "Oh, mom, gotta get this!" And obviously I got it. And then I remember being quite frightened by Red Skull as a kid.
Looking back at it now, I don't think that holds up now, does it?
No. But yeah, I absolutely, as being a little kid, thought it was amazing back then.
Here's the thing, though. I've never seen the film before the last time, before this, but I used to see the poster and the trailer everywhere.
Yeah.
The trailer was in, like, many VHSs I owned. The posters were everywhere in every, like, video store that you used to get. And I used to, this is the thing, though. I think I always was held off, though, because even though the trailer looked all right and the poster was kind of triumphant and great, when I looked at the VHS and looked at the front and the back of it, even as a kid, I looked at it going, it's a bit rubbish, isn't it? I genuinely was convinced. Yeah. It's like, this looks a bit rubbish, because I saw Batman before. Like, now that, Batman. I looked at it going, this doesn't look like Batman.
Yeah, because I think the poster didn't even have Captain America on it. It had like the logo and the shield really big, didn't it? So you kind of like, it kind of hid the imperfections. But I think the VHS had Captain America, like Matt Salinger is Captain America massive on the cover. And it's kind of like, it doesn't look too great in his rubbery suit, does he?
Yeah, and then when you look at the back, you see, like, the Red Skull looking at it, going like, that's, you know, because by beforehand, it's like, oh, we saw the Joker and stuff like that before. It's like, yeah, it's like, I don't know. I wasn't sold on it, basically. So I've only seen this now fairly recently, and I've only known a little bit more about it ever since Clips, basically. I've been seeing Clips and realizing, this is going to be one we're going to have to do. But and you know what? It's something. You can see that they've tried.
Yeah, yeah. It's like it's one of those where it's actually got a lot of, like, a lot of people sort of say, "Come on, it's not that bad." You get, like, people who love like bad cult movies and stuff, and, like, defend it quite a bit from what I've seen. But then you get a lot of people that hate it, absolutely hate it.
For anyone who doesn't know what the jiggity jam we're talking about, this is Captain America. Now, Captain America in this version is the 1990 American / Yugoslavian. All right, we can see where half the money came from. superhero film directed by Albert Pyun, I believe it is. P-Y-U-N. I've never heard of this man.
I do know that he's famous for, you know, the Cyborg series. Like, I think he did the first Cyborg movie. Did really well. So it's a B-movie that, like, it was a success in terms of it was, like, the fourth highest grossing movie on release or something in the U.S., so... At the time, that when it was released, it was doing pretty well. It was like four in the movie charts.
I know, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, you know what? Okay, right. Okay, so he's maybe done well, but it's Cyborg, for God's sake. It isn't like, it isn't like, oh, he's done something Oscar-worthy. It's Cyborg, right? Now, the film, obviously, as we know, the film is based on the Marvel superhero character of the same name. While the film takes several liberties with the comic storyline, it still features some of the major points, which is Steve Rogers is becoming Captain America during the Second World War. He has to battle the Red Skull. He's being frozen in ice and subsequently being revived to save the President of the United States from a crime family that dislikes his environmentalist policies.
There is a bit of a Captain Planet kind of vibe to this, isn't there?
It does. It's sort of like saying that Nazis and fascists just don't like the environment. It's such a weird tone to go for.
Yeah, it is also, there's the whole thing of where the movie kind of like blames all the world's problems on, it was just all Red Skull all along. Everything that's gone wrong. I have got the bit where Red Skull is talking about the assassinations.
Go for it.
Yeah.
No. Assassination is the word of trouble. It took me 2 years to find Sirhan. 3 to find Oswald. The king job alone cost us over $22 million. And what do we get for all our pains? Saints. Martyrs.
Right.
Goals.
Brilliant.
It's still going.
Oh, God, it's still going.
I've got the whole clip.
Our statesmen.
Wait.
Generals. Captains of industry. I am only a humble businessman who doubles in science. Before you make your decision, may I suggest, instead of killing Kimball, we control him using a brain implant I have invented. Then he will do whatever we wish.
Sure, brain implant.
So he's talking about the assassinations of the presidents and also what he wants to do the current president.
Apparently he has he's linked to every horrible thing on the planet.
Yeah, all the sort of political figures that were very influential, he's just wiped them off.
And here's the thing, like, he says also the King Project, so it also includes Martin Luther King.
Yeah.
And apparently, if you look into it closely as well, he's also mentioned he may have been the one who killed Elvis Presley. Why not? So, sure.
All the people we love, kind of.
Nuclear pie plant, pictured here.
The movie, the whole thing with this is, like, the movie has had several, a bajillion rewrites, but the production for this is fascinating. Okay, so this technically wasn't the first ever feature-length Captain America movie. In fact, there were several beforehand, but they were all straight to TV, right?
Yeah.
So they were straight to TV movies. There was two of them starring Red Brown, which is another classic person we should totally put onto the trash tape at some point. Him playing Captain America. One movie which was called, I believe it was just called Captain America. And the second one is Captain America 2, Death Too Soon. What a title.
Oh, my God.
Right? This is the one where Captain America famously has a motorcycle, right? Those are the two. Captain America famously has a motorcycle. His outfit is weird, and let's not get into the outfit. But they were never designed really to be for anything other than for TV, because they were trying to, like, get off the hype of Superman, and they were also trying to getting on like things by selling a lot of TV rights. They thought they could do more television Marvel back in the day, which is why we have the Lou Ferrigno Incredible Hulk TV series and the live action Spider-Man TV series, which was weird. And a whole bunch of tripe.
Yeah, basically back then superhero movies weren't taken seriously, really. They only thought they could put them on TV. No one thought they'd if they put a movie out, they thought no one would go and see it.
Yeah, until Superman came along.
Yeah.
Oh shit, we could do superhero movies. Okay, and Superman 2 came out and they were great. A decade later, Batman came out and really revived what the idea of the superhero movie was going to be for a while.
Mm.
So, but that's the thing is, The movies we talked about around that time that were good were all DC, because DC Comics gave the rights to all their property to Warner Brothers.
Yes.
Yeah.
So they own all of it. So it's, they're backed by a big studio. Marvel didn't do that. Marvel were pretty terribly skint around the 80s and 90s.
You can tell that a lot of the problems were perhaps just money with this film. Because the director sounds like he kind of wanted to do good things with it. And apparently the script, the original script, was very good. And, like, you know, the guy, Ronnie Cox, who played the president, he said that I don't know how they messed it up. It's one of the best scripts he's ever written.
Ever read.
Yeah. So I don't know what went wrong, basically. Money, it's got to be.
Right.
Marvel at this time were pretty broke. They weren't doing very well in the comics section, and they weren't doing a lot of stuff here. So instead of giving all their rights to a studio, a big studio, they decided to just say when they were desperate, they would sell the rights to a character to somebody else, to someone else, which is why it all went all over the shop, which is why even before the Super Marvel merger and how basically Disney now owns all of Marvel, Marvel was in every different property. It was Sony had Spider-Man, which they still do. X-Men was owned by, you know, 20th Century Fox. The Universal owned the Hulk, all that kind of stuff, right? Mm. Oh, the Hulk movie. Let's put a pin on that one, yeah? The whole point being, Marvel, when it comes to movies, especially around this time, weren't very savvy. The production for this is brilliant. So, after the semi-weird cult following of the 70s movies straight to TV, Stan Lee and a few others were looking and saying, okay, maybe it's about time now to maybe make a Captain America feature-length movie. Now, this came along around the time when Superman came out. So they were more going for the Superman vibe, yeah? Like red, white, and blue, you know, good old boy kind of thing, yeah?
Yeah.
Now the movie was originally slated and about to come out. What they had an idea for it since 1981, okay?
Wow.
It's been a while. And then it was basically, I'm looking at the facts here, and says the feature-length film production of Captain America for its theatrical release has a long and tumultuous production history. The rights were originally purchased by Canon, the Canon Group.
Yeah, what a surprise. It looks like a Canon movie, doesn't it, this?
Yeah, and I'll explain why. So in 1984, the film rights for Captain America were bought by Canon Group. Initially, do you know who was attached to direct this movie?
No, I think I did read it. I can't remember, though.
Michael Winner, a.k.a. the person who directed the first three Death Wish movies.
Right, okay. Interesting.
All right. Now, for 2 years, it was put on the shelf because they were just working on it and so on. And then Winner scrapped that script entirely and then recruited a British television script writer, Stan Hay, a.k.a. the person who wrote, Old Wiedersehen Pet, basically. Right.
Okay.
So he was going to write this Captain America movie for some reason, all right? Now, the original plot for this was, according to him, the film was involved this. So the Red Skull has survived all this time. He was going to be the elderly Red Skull, right? And Steve Rogers would not be frozen. He would have been alive, but he would have been aging a bit. Like he's now a little older. He's been in hiding. He's an artist, apparently. He was going to be a painter living in the forest for a little while.
He wasn't frozen.
No, in this version, he wasn't frozen. Right.
Okay.
So he survived. He was hiding out in the forest, like trying to escape the horrors of war.
And I guess it was because of his serum that made him like age slower or something, you know, like his superpowers. So. Yeah.
I guess so.
Yeah.
It doesn't really say. So the Red Skull, aided by a female death cult.
Yeah.
Were going to steal the Statue of Liberty.
What?
That's the plot.
That sounds like the plot in like a cartoon, doesn't it? Like G.I. Joe cartoon or something.
Oh, it does. And I flip
like Cobra
love
Commander
that.
Would do that, wouldn't he? Like
it would be. It's like, no, this sounds like a bizarre version of like fucking, you know, where on earth is Carmen Sandiego? She is coming in, stealing the Statue of Liberty, and now finally Captain America comes and stops her down. That's what it literally feels like to me. It's ridiculous. However, The movie was going to be set in the... If this movie wasn't going to be set in modern times, it was going to be set in the 60s. So it's going to be like the swinging 60s, a whole bunch of like cool 60s looks and stuff. I don't know why, but they were going to go for the 60s. Mm. I think it's because they wanted the excuse of, yeah, I know they're supposed to be older, but you don't want them that old, yeah. I guess so. It was supposed to be in the swing 60s, just during the... just during around the time of the Vietnam War, where Captain America is hiding something. The Vietnam War, ooh, political, and then for some fucking reason, Red Skull tries to steal the Statue of Liberty. So
it actually does sound like it would have been hilarious. I don't think it would have been good, but it might have been like a good bad movie.
Yeah, so. And this would have been like a scratching your head, like wow. Although the movie we got to see still had a few of those. Later on, though, some of the negative feedback from the Winner and Hay version, right? Winner then had to start over again. So this is now the third time, okay? Working alongside Stan Lee. So this time they actually said, no, Stan Lee, okay, we'll work with you. Okay, we'll actually work with you. You give us ideas for this script, okay?
Why wouldn't you go to Stan Lee first, you know?
I don't know. Thing is, Stan Lee, because you have Stan Lee and Jack Kirby. Stan Lee and Jack Kirby were the ones who created Captain America.
Yeah.
Right? So you would kind of think that even though they gave the film rights to them, you thought they would maybe be like go to the source. But I think this is around a time like in the 70s and 80s where comic books weren't really seen as pure literature. You know what I mean?
No, definitely. Yeah. It weren't taken seriously, you know.
So maybe they think like, oh, we're not going to go to them. We can write better. We're movie makers. These guys just write comics. So maybe that's the thing that are in their head, right?
Yeah.
But by this point, by 1987, so you can see from 1981 when they were trying when the rights were kind of floating around, 1984. So it took about 3 to 4 years to get to a point. And then when it got to this point, Winner left the project.
Mm.
He completely left the project. Like,
I've had enough of this kind of thing. I'm out of here kind of thing.
Yeah, it's like, I'm just thinking Michael Winner. So like, you know, this is the guy who did Death Wish. So this is the thing that also curious me. A Captain America dubbed by the director of Death Wish.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of... He's quite well known as being a bit of a dirtbag, Michael Winner.
Yeah. But it just sounds like it'll be a weird mishmash of like... pure patriotic cheese, bit of a scumbag put together.
He'd probably try and put a rape scene in there somewhere. You know what he's like.
This then moved on to actor-director John Stockwell came on board and then had another script written by Stephen Tolkien, right? So Stephen Tolkien wrote the script and everything else was sorting out. Then the thing was, one of the producers of Canon left Canon in 1989, right? And part of his severance package was he was going to gain control of 21st Century Film Corp, right? Which allowed him to, he now owns the film rights to Captain America. So in other words, it was a Canon film, but then one of the main owners of Canon left and said, oh, if I'm going to leave, I'm taking Captain America with me.
Okay.
Okay. Right. So that means John Stockwell's idea was then scrapped again. So this has gone through about 4 iterations and we haven't even started filming yet.
Blimey. Well, it doesn't sound like it sounds like it's evolved so much that it's not the same thing anymore. You know, it's like a different kind of idea, like the end result. It's not like the same thing in production all the time, is it? You know.
Nah. It feels like it's been scrapped so many times that everyone's like, we're doing this version now. It's like, nah, I don't like it. We're going to do this version now. Nah, I don't like it. We're going to do this one. The director's left. Fine. Fuck it. Oh, we're going to do this one again. Oh, I'm leaving the company. I'm taking this with me. It's all really kind of petty and a bit kind of dumb, if you think about it.
See, I would say that in terms of the production of this film, I would have said that would have started when this director got involved. That's when it kind of started.
100%, which Albert Pune, who who previously worked with Canon anyway, was brought on board to work on Tolkien's script. that was originally started with canon, but do a massive rewrite. Now, according to the interview with, according to an interview, Tolkien,
not Tolkien. Explain.
No, no, it's just Tolkien. It's not, not Tolkien. It's imagine just for a second.
Tolkien's okay? Captain America.
Oh my god! You know the script would be about 10 pages of him just describing the scenery before yeah. we even get to like Captain America gang. This would make more sense. Flying eagles. Yes.
That'd be fantastic. Brilliant.
So Tolkien explained some of the changes he made to the original from the original comic. So he started to go like, I'm going to do a little diversion from the comic, including changes to the appearance and the character of Red Skull, which we're going to let's talk about Red Skull for a minute.
Yeah. So he was made Italian for a start.
Yes.
Yeah, and it's I think what I did like about this movie is that the origin story is quite a dark, tragic story that they create. He's not like that. The origin story isn't like that in the comics at all. Mm. You know, and I think it's because they wanted to kind of make them both kind of tragedies, didn't they? Both Captain America and Red Skull, similar, and have tragic kind of stories, well, I guess.
I guess, but it feels like, here's the thing, though. It feels like the Red Skull had the worst part of it. Because the Red Skull was abducted as a child, right? Taken to a German-Italian fascist facility to be tested on, and then mutate into this, well, what looks like the oh, wow, what is the makeup on that face?
Yeah,
wow,
it's kind of horrible. But yeah, I do like that, and it kicks you off with that dark origin straight away, isn't it? Right at the beginning of the movie.
Yeah, and you kind of thinking like, ooh, this might actually be pretty decent, because like this is a dark turn, and it's the first 5 minutes of the movie, and thinking, okay, you've head deep. We're going head deep into this backstory of the Red Skull, different but still pretty. Pretty tragic.
Although
right?
You know that it's not going to be too dark, because at the start of the movie it kicks off with this.
I love like, this tune.
This just eases you in to like cheese, doesn't it?
Yeah, and it's really bizarre because the way it starts, the music kicks in, and then you just see like an Italian. Yeah, you hear like an Italian village and everything else and kids running around and the logo Captain America, and you're thinking, oh, it's triumphant, but then you don't see Cap anywhere. And then you see this, you're turning into this horrific child experimentation.
Yeah, and the logo that comes on the screen is exactly like the comic logo, which works with the comic, but in the movie it kind of looks so cheesy and like sort of really cartoony, doesn't it, on there? It's got like the red, white, and blue stripes across the text. It's that logo.
Now, here's the thing. They also changed it. So halfway through Degenerations, he had plastic surgery to fix his face. And the main reason is, and I quote, this is from Tolkien himself. He said, I don't think people wanted to keep looking at his horrible skull face forever.
Well, cool, he's Red Skull. Sure, you know, you've got to expect him to look horrible and hideous throughout the movie.
But this is the thing. It's like, it's not... it's very difficult to describe just through audio. But, you know, compare this to, you know, Hugo Weaving's Red Skull in the first Captain America, the First Avenger, right? Mm. Where it's just basically like a face that's more latex and stuck in red all over, and there's nothing really weird about it. It looks pretty intimidating. It looks scary. It looks more like the comic. Mm. This version, though, what were with the giant chunky pieces in the head and the cracks? What was up with that?
I know. He kind of looks like a demon, doesn't he? More than a skull, like a red skull. It's like a demonic kind of face, isn't it? That's bright red.
There were moments in it, I was looking at it and I said to myself, you look like a Lego head.
Yeah.
Like you actually, the shape of the head looks like a Lego head, right? With the thing popped up and everything, with just a bit of cracks on it. And he can barely blink. He can barely move. He looked incredibly uncomfortable. Nah, mate. Nah. And I can totally understand, because it was done so cheaply that I laughed the first time I saw it.
Yeah. Well, it's not just the visual you laugh at with Red Skull, though, is it? It's the delivery of his line. He is so over the top, but I find it so entertaining. Most of the best dialogue is either just Red Skull on his own or exchanges with Captain America.
Yeah, like, for example, at one point when Captain America goes and infiltrates Red Skull's base for the first time, the moment when he ties him up to, like, when having the fight and they're tying him and he's tying him up to the rocket, it's what kind of banter is happening there?
I've got a clip. Shall I play it?
Play it, please.
You are a perfect symbol of America, my brother. Weak and self-pitiful. You have even failed to teach me English. But
I am much practicing while you
sleep. I am much practicing.
Where is the big bomb going?
The big bomb is the big bomb going to the...
How you say Casabianca? No, don't tell me. I know. It's White House. A present
going
for
to the White
President
House.
Roosevelt. Tell me, do you think I could be president of the United States?
What are you on?
I love that they just strap him to a rocket to be like, have that, America.
Principal photography then happened in 1989 and was completed in 1990. Now, here's the thing. The whole thing was shot and edited within a year, which...
Wow.
Whole thing within a year, right? So, well done for them, I guess. But the release for this had trouble. Now, the film was intended to have an August 1990 release, okay, to coincide with Captain America's 50th anniversary.
Yeah.
So, okay, smart thinking, right? Several release dates were announced between all this, you know, around, well, also several other release dates throughout the world were done with that. But the film was unreleased for 2 years before it went direct to video. And the reason why was because there was a very small theatrical release in different parts of the world, right?
Mm.
But the one that got launched was panned so badly by test audiences and the people who did go to see it, they immediately pulled it away.
Mm.
Right, they immediately pulled it away and kept it on the shelf for 2 years before they decided to say, fuck it, we're putting it straight onto video.
Right, so they're a bit sort of ashamed of it to put it in the cinemas at that point.
They
must have had no idea it was going to be that bad, because they had all that release planned and everything, and it'd be like, oh yeah, it would have launched at the right time. And but no, yeah. God, they must have just thought, oh shit.
They're going like, oh no, this has not gone well at all. And this is another reason why the movie was getting so hyped up and failed. Some teaser trailers for the movie were shown in selective screenings of Tim Burton's Batman, right?
Right, yeah.
So you'd see the trailer for this before you got to see Batman, right? Mm. So, again, really building up on the hype, saying, yeah, Captain America, yeah, oh, this is going to be great, yeah, yeah. Flop. Absolute flipping flop. When the first set of screenings happened pretty badly, right?
Mm.
The movie was then had reshoots. So yeah. This is partly the reason why it was put on the shelf for 2 years. It started to say, right, we're gonna need some reshoots. We're gonna need to fix some of this. We need to fix whatever the hell this is. I don't know what they tried to fix. I don't think it made it better.
And also, they didn't have much money, like hardly any money. So how could they fix it without money?
I have no idea. Here's the thing, though, and this is what I love. Before this movie was introduced, like properly, the version was introduced to cinemas to TV in 1992. Stan Lee wrote an intro for it.
Mm.
Do you know what he said? And I'm sitting there going like, nah, you're lying. This is PR up the wazoo. Director Albert Pune, this is what he said. I can't do a Stan Lee voice, by the way. I'm not going to do it. Like, Excelsior! Nah, I'm not going to do it. Dr. Albert Pune did so well and so excitedly that everyone in the audience at the screening kept clamoring for more. when talking about the reshoots.
Right.
Nah, it's bollocks, mate. You don't most of the time when you do reshoots, you don't do a reshoot because the movie's so good, we want more of it.
He was just twisting it to make it sound positive, wasn't he, basically?
Yeah, I think it's either that or Albert's like, no, reshoots are normal. Sometimes something's so good, we need to put more of it in. It's oh, crazy. Poor buddy. But yeah, and then it was like unceremoniously launched on television in 1992. And then when people watched it, they were not very excited about it. And obviously now it's kind of fallen into obscurity until obviously now, like around this time where people are sort of reemerging this movie kind of got a resurgence when the Captain America movie from 2011 came out.
Didn't you do a director's cut and like release that and showed that in some cinemas and around on the same year? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. To celebrate it in a weird way, to say like, this was the first attempt at it. And if no one's really saw it and they want to have a look at it. And yeah, there was a director's cut. It was released on tour. So it wasn't like, oh, it was all launched at once. The director went with the movie and went to theater to do sort of a road show kind of thing.
A bit like a Tommy Wiseau kind of thing with The Room, isn't it? Yeah.
Pretty much.
Get all those like bad movie fans, you know, get all them on board.
Throughout the years of them trying to develop a Captain America movie, there were quite a few people up for the role. Do you know any of them? Or do you want me to share?
I do, actually. Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Arnold Schwarzenegger was in line for it.
Dolph Lundgren. But he was involved with Punisher, wasn't he? So
yes, he basically was. He was signed up for it, but he decided to do Punisher instead. Which that's a different kettle of fish.
One for another episode, I think. But yeah, I'm trying to think if I know any more. I don't think I think they're the only ones that popped out that I remember.
Oh! Do you want to know what it is?
Yeah,
Val Kilmer.
Oh yeah, and he wanted to do the Doors movie instead, didn't he? Which is a good decision because that was a really good movie.
Better choice. Oh my god.
Yeah, yeah. Oh. He picked that one well, I think.
Oh, that was well done, buddy.
Yeah,
you dodged a bullet there. Otherwise, you would have forever been known as the most uncharismatic Captain America ever because you got Matt Salinger, which poor guy, but he was just nope.
Yeah.
Not good choice.
Although a few years later, he was Batman, wasn't he? And it messed that up. So,
yeah, we're talking about Val Kilmer. I think he just can't do superheroes.
No.
Val Kilmer steps away from superheroes. Better choice. The reception for this movie was, well, absolutely panned, universally panned by critics, holding a 7%. On Rotten Tomatoes, 7%.
Yeah. Although, right. I don't know about you, but I don't always trust Rotten Tomatoes because some films they've rated really low and I quite like them. And so I don't always trust it. So
true. I mean, there are movies that are like badly bombed, you know, like they're review bombed when it's like, oh, I don't like a thing. They review it terribly. But realistically, this was before all that. So looking at things, so on average, the rating for this, average rating for it is about 2.9 out of 10.
Yeah.
The consensus of it states that the film felt like it had lack of script, budget, direction, or star power for doing any justice to the source material. This Captain America should have been left under the ice. Ooh, scathing, right? This was, at the time, and it is still, one of the lowest-rated Marvel movies on Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah. I can understand why.
Yeah.
It's just that people like us, I mean, we like sort of bad movies, but I can imagine if people who don't, they would absolutely hate this.
Yeah, oh, this is the thing, like, and do you know how you were mentioning as well, like, the opening's very dark, but the whole thing feels very, like, kid-friendly, yeah?
Yeah. Definitely, like, sort of confusing themes and stuff.
Another critic mentioned, this movie isn't merely wrong for kids. It opens in pre-war Italy with a sequence in Italian with subtitles and a machine gun slaughter. It's just all wrong. The savoring that the movie is a shapeless blob of a plot and gave it an F.
God.
Wow. Some of these are pure scathing. And in 2006, a Flickering Myth, who re-looked at the movie, said, it's not a great film, and it's really only for the interest for the pre-cinematic universe curious for the hardcore Marvel fans. Everyone else, avoid like the plague.
Yeah. But there is, I don't know if you've seen, there is some positive reviews, but I think they're more recent, nostalgia kind of ones.
I'm definitely thinking that the ones you look back at it now,
the ones who look back at it now,
they're looking at it a little bit more like, I think they're definitely more kinder to it. Mm. And I think it's because they're looking, oh, it's the early 90s. It always looked like this. Or you're having moments where, you know, you didn't have direct competition in terms of that at the time. It's been allowed to fester and linger a bit and find its own audience. Because picture it, you were fighting against Tim Burton's Batman and Superman at the time.
Mm.
How are you going to compete with that? And then you look at this and you're thinking, they don't have the money, they don't have the plot, they don't have the star power. No way are they going to do well. So, of course, it got critically panned as well. Now just go for the movie. Now, we've already talked in length about what the opening of the movie is. So the weird pre-war Italy child abduction / experimentation where we're introduced to the Italian scientist who looks familiar but definitely isn't the woman I'm thinking of. And escapes with a diary or whatever.
I love in that. What other thing though? I love the how evil. Obviously, the Nazis. You're going to make him evil, but like, I love that they like grab the boy with superior intelligence and they like face him towards the family as they're getting shot. It's like, you've got to see this. It's like horrible.
It's a weird
so
one,
over
well,
the top 90s bad guys style, isn't it?
Like, and this is a weird thing. It's like, how do they know that kid has superior intelligence?
I know, like, they just don't explain that at all. They just kind of, they just know, don't they? You just got to expect, just imagine that they know somehow. I don't know.
They just happen to know, like, that kid is really smart. Let's kidnap him and turn him into a guinea pig.
Yeah.
Okay. And then once that happens, it cuts to literally 7 years later. Right? And we are now in America, and we get to see Steve Rogers for the first time in a quite unusually lame way, I'm not going to lie, his introduction, where he is just sitting there in his kitchen talking to his mother.
Yeah. And he's kind of like, I suppose Steve Rogers is meant to be a bit of a sort of a nerdy guy, isn't he? And he's like, what is it that he's supposed to have his condition? Because he's kind of like limping.
Polio.
He's like limping around, isn't he?
Polio.
Yeah.
The kid's supposed to have polio. Okay, so now Steve Rogers has polio, right? And so I think also the same time his father's dead, I think it is. So the whole thing is that they're kind of like doing a thing and his dad's dead. And at the same time as well, they're saying, your dad would like this. You know, he would appreciate you going onto the mission. His mum, by the way, they look exactly the same age, by the way.
No. And she's sort of talking about the dad, like, sort of dying. It's like, and he's like saying, well, just kind of make sure that you don't die as well. That kind of casual conversation. And then he goes, but where's Bernie? Where's Bernie? And then he goes off to find Bernie, doesn't he? And they have, which is obviously his love interest, you know, and like, they have a very, very cheesy piece of dialogue.
It's this.
I'm sorry, it's just that I love you. And I can't imagine not knowing what you're doing or where you're going.
It's just like pure cheese soap opera. You got the cheesy piano underneath. It sounds exactly and looks exactly like a soap, doesn't it?
Exactly. And I'm definitely feeling like this is just from that 10 minutes alone, that's all I felt. I feel like it felt like a TV movie. It actually felt like it was supposed to be a TV movie. It never felt like How am I supposed to look at this on the big screen? It doesn't feel cinematic enough with the dialogue, the look of the movie. And look, we met Bernie. We only know Bernie for about a minute. And then we're whooshed away. And how are we supposed to know that this is the love of his life? Like, really?
Yeah, I suppose the only thing it's given you is the fact that he doesn't want to leave before, like, seeing her and stuff. So he rushes off to find her and, like, say goodbye.
Yeah, but it's like, that's all you get. A run, a couple of lines of dialogue, a hug, and then he's now taken, very quickly, by the way, he's now taken by the same Italian scientist who escaped the pre-Italy war fortress.
Yeah, Dr. Vaselli, isn't it? Dr. Vaselli.
Dr. Vaselli, yeah. Dr.
Why
Vaselli.
Is she in the car as well? She like, meets him there. Like, surely he would just meet like her at the facility later on. Like,
I don't know. But it's more like, I think, because again, they must have done this to be quick. It's like, right, we have to be quick. We have to move the plot along because we have a lot to get through. Mm. And listen, all this is within the first 10 minutes, right? So they get in the car.
It's super speedy, really is.
Get in the car. They are immediately in the facility. He's tied up. No one explains that there's a super serum. No one explains who anyone is. Everyone's just there. And we're on a roll, people. We're on a roll.
One other thing I'd like to say, like the facility is like in a diner, isn't it? It's like, it's almost like a bat cave. You kind of like open a kind of thing and it's the wall swivels around and you go down the stairs into the secret facility.
See, that I'm okay with, because that's like very Batman. It's like, oh, let me just pull a couple of weird levers. Oh, let's go down the spiral staircase. It's great. But you're sitting there going, we're immediately here. Nothing's explained. We're just, fuck, okay. Right, we're into this. We're in this. Once he gets super serum, which, be honest, you couldn't really tell a goddamn difference in terms of his look or anything comparison.
I think, obviously, well, they didn't have the technology to do what they did in the 2011 one, but I think what they did is they tried to make him, they gave him baggy clothes and stuff, didn't they? So they tried to make him look like he was not filling out his clothes and he was, like, skinny. And I think they made him look a bit more beefy when he was Captain America, just by having the right size clothes on.
It's like, buy him a tighter outfit. Yeah. He'll look like he's booming, right? It's hilarious.
But he immediately, when they inject the serum and he goes through the process, he immediately like breaks out, doesn't he? Because the Dr. Vaselis is killed by a German Nazi spy. And this is the section.
I'd like you to meet Richard Ehrlich. He's a special observer sent by President Roosevelt.
Oh, remarkable work, Dr. Vaselli.
Congratulations.
Heil Hitler!
I love that. It's just like, it's not supposed to be funny, is it? When he's like, Heil Hitler, and shoots her like cold blood. But it's amazing.
It so fast. And it happens so fast.
Yeah, and as soon as that happens, that kind of alerts Captain America. He just breaks out of his restraints and just, he gets shot about three times, just keeps going, just like beats the guy up, doesn't he?
My favorite bit, he grabs the guy, throws him into what seems like a bunch of computer or electrical stuff, and then he's getting electrocuted. But I love how the guy's position is. He's like this. He's got his arms up, his legs like in a cross, and he's just jiggling on the spot as he's just getting electrocuted, and then just falls flat. It is so cheesy. It's kind of brilliant. And that's, again, this is all in the first 10 minutes.
Yeah, and it keeps going at that pace, doesn't it? Like, I think pretty much like after that, you're in the plane with like Captain America fully suited up. There's no like introduction to the suit like you would normally in a superhero movie. You get like show him the suit and he'll look at it, and there's a bit of a tension like build up. He's actually in the suit in the plane, about to be dropped into enemy territory, and you get the guy who's like sort of give him like a bit of like prep work about what's going on in the meeting. It talks about the suit and they say this.
You all right with that there, Shield?
Could use a little more time to practice. Like about a month.
You're gonna have those two resistance fellas down there to take you through that launch site like they was escorting you to the senior prom. Besides, you got that crazy fireproof uniform Dr. Vaselli made up for you.
Doesn't look very fireproof.
Didn't know much about camouflage. No, at all.
Nope.
But she sure did love the red, white, and blue.
So they're kind of making a joke about, they're trying to cover themselves with the costume, aren't they? Because they're saying, like, it's not really much of a camouflage, you know, it's kind of suit.
Yeah.
And then just talking about how patriotic she is, like... The suit was designed by the same people who did Batman's suit. Yeah.
Yeah, same, which I kind of feel like I'm sitting there going, like, I think that's, I think they were having a bit of a bad day there compared to Michael Keaton's Batman suit.
Yeah.
Compared to this. You think, like, well, someone's having a lazy day.
Yeah, although I read as well that the director kind of wanted a more, like, tactical kind of look, like, in the black and stuff, but the studio were like, no, we need the red, white, and blue.
Now, here's the thing. It's not the studio. It was Marvel.
Oh, Marvel. Right, okay.
Marvel demanded it. So, basically, he said, like, Albert Pune approached Marvel's Comics, about making a black Captain America suit that was coming out around the same time in the comics in 1989. So, around that time, Captain America was having that. Marvel said no, right? He then asked if he could make the suit more tactical with, like, with a belt and quartermail armor and stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Make it look more military. Marvel also said no. He was then told by them that it has to be the classic red, white, and blue leather latex outfit. Otherwise, the movie's not going ahead.
God, they shot themselves in the foot then a bit, to be honest. But it's like, yeah. I also read that the other idea of the suit would have been actually similar to the 2011 one. So
yeah,
they should have gone with that one, really, because that one was okay. People liked that, didn't they?
But here's the thing. This is the thing for me that still boggles the mind about the costume. Okay, so you've made sort of a red, white, and blue costume. Okay, I get that. Why the wings?
Oh, like, and his helmet on his, wings? Like, hood. Yeah.
Why the wings? I know they're part of the original costume, but it's so dumb-looking.
I mean, I would say that the worst part is the ears, the fake ears. Because originally they had it cut out so that his ears could poke through, but it was it was chafing too much. They ended up just putting prosthetic ears, just slapping them on the sides.
But here's the thing. Matt Salinger's costume is a factoid, was made out of heavy rubber. Okay. So it was heavily padded and he didn't breathe. Filming took place in the summer in Yugoslavia with temperatures reaching up to 40 degrees Celsius.
My God. He nearly got heat exhaustion, didn't he? Yeah.
Yeah, he pretty much nearly was taken off the movie entirely out of heat exhaustion. Mm.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
So he's dumped in enemy territory, and he still looks so, like, he's like fumbling around, isn't he? And he kind of like gets his shield out, and then they put the searchlight on. He's like, oh shit, what am I going to do? And he tries to like chuck the shield and stuff. They make him look crap, don't they, in this scene? He's like Captain America, and I know he's meant to be like sort of like new to the role of Captain America. But yeah. I think fans really kicked off with the fact that he's shit in that scene. He's like really, really bad.
Yeah, is shield throwing is quite interesting. Like, I think it took a lot of edits to get the shield to look like it was flying across the air. Mm. But it did make me laugh some of it. Like, the first time when he's on the ground, he throws a shield and takes down an entire, like, outpost with one fell swoop.
I know. And apparently they've never revealed how they did the effects for that, because it was pre-CGI. So I guess it might have been like wire work or something. It might have had it like floating along via a wire.
To be frank, I don't really want to know, because it just looks kind of... Nowadays, it looks kind of dumb.
What's weird about it is that he kind of abandons the whole stealth thing. It's like, well, I've got this suit that's standing out so much. Fuck it with the stealth. I'll just go in there, all guns blazing. And he just walks in the front door, basically, doesn't he, of Red Skull's, like, lair. lair and just like has a fight with Red Skull and just
which looks pretty crap. It literally looks just like two bunch of people in rubber just bouncing off each other, and then he's kidnapped, and then he's kidnapped and he's tied to a rocket, and we've already described that scene with the rocket where he's launched. But then remember, Red Skull loses a hand.
Yeah, because he Captain America basically grabs onto him and says, "If I'm going, you're coming with me," doesn't he? So he has to hack his own hand off.
Which is okay. You're also the fact that the Red Skull's very, very close to that rocket anyway. Like, they're literally like face to face. Like, and you can see the rocket's flying off. It's like, dude, get out of the way! You're gonna get burnt terribly.
Oh my God. It's perfect. It's just this. It's so hilarious that whole scene.
That's covering fire from there.
This whole scene is my favorite scene in the movie, where we're now suddenly in Washington DC.
Yeah.
Right. Now, question: the base is like it's supposed to be in Italy, or is it not in Italy? It's supposed to be in Berlin or like Germany. Yeah.
Yeah.
This rocket. It's going to take quite a fucking while to get over to Washington, D.C., right? To take out the White House. So I'm just having this funny thought of just Steve Rogers. He's just lying there for hours thinking, what the fuck am I going to do? It's going to take at least an hour or so for it to fly over all the way to there. I'm thinking, what is happening?
Yes.
And then we get this boy, right? We get this boy who has the cheesiest lines in the history of ever. Like, you must have a few of these from the little boy, yeah? You must have a few.
No, I don't actually have much from the boy. You're talking about the president when he's a kid, yeah?
Yes. Okay, so first of all, you see this boy who's staring out the window at night, which is sort of a weird... The way they do it is weird because you get a whole bunch of B-roll from, like, Washington, D.C., and then you see the kid staring out the window. Then the mum comes in and says, like, it's like... Honey, it's late. Why are you not sleeping? I can't sleep. This is Washington, D.C. What does that even mean?
He's like so excited, isn't he? He's so patriotic. He's like really excited to meet the president and stuff, isn't he? Like,
it's so dumb.
I mean, were kids like that back then? I don't know.
Now, here's the thing. You can't just say, I can't sleep. This is Washington, D.C. You live in it. Do you mean that you basically say you never sleep?
Yeah.
Brilliant. Right. So he goes to sleep, but he doesn't really go to sleep. He takes his camera and he goes out because he wants to take a photo of the White House. Sure, why not? And then using his super-powered camera, like this has to be super-powered, he turns around and sees the rocket that's going directly towards the White House.
Yeah. And the thing is, it's not like a zoom camera, really. It's like it looks like a standard, like, camera from what, the 40s or something.
Yeah.
And he manages to see in detail what a moving rocket. He manages to see Captain America strapped on in detail and take a really good close up of his face on the it's quite dark because it's like at night, but yeah, he gets every little bit of detail down in his head and he knows exactly who it is. And
even though it's like, this is supposed to be a top secret thing. No one knows who Captain America is. Captain America is supposed to be top secret. So somehow this boy knows, which he did. This did not go well. He takes a picture of this, by the way. And then Captain America's on here while somehow also gets to see the boy, even though he is not in the same direction. He's looking up at the sky. And he's nowhere able to see the boy. Knowing for some reason there's this boy with a super-powered camera, he kicks the rocket, the flaps on the rocket, you know, the fins.
Yeah. I mean, I think that he's basically kicking the fins because he knows he's approaching the White House. I don't think he sees the boy, because later on he says, we've met before, and he's like,
No, he does. He does, because he says something like that after. He says, so you're the boy. So what? You do know who he is.
It is amazing. So he basically avoids the White House and just keeps going.
And the boy.
Yeah, and the boy. And just keeps going and ends up in Alaska, doesn't he?
And he's frozen in ice.
Yeah.
And that's how we do the whole storyline of him frozen in ice.
And then we get this cool time skip montage which is like this.
Yes! Play it.
National Surrender of Japan.
So you get these, like, sound-alikes of songs of the eras.
It's ridiculous.
Newspapers how many... spinning and flashing on the screen.
Yeah, it's so cheesy.
Bear any burden, uphold any foe.
I heard Tom Kimball joined to go to Vietnam because he felt it was his obligation as an
American. I like how some of the papers as well, just like, local boy goes to war. It's like, that's a headline?
This is like Duran Duran, this bit.
Yes!
Old Tom gave up his practice to go help out in Africa. His conscience wouldn't allow him to sit and do nothing about the...
I love a good time skip montage. It's quite well done, this. It's like...
It's cheesy as balls, but I like it. It's cheesy as balls, but well done to him.
It kind of reminded me of, like, the 60s Batman as well, with the spinning papers.
Elected last night on a platform that one man can make a difference.
Before we get to the present day stuff, can we talk about the music in general? Can we just talk about the soundtrack of this movie?
Yeah, I saw it as, like, very, very 90s, but it's also, definitely... getting a lot of sort of sound alikes in there, so because they can't afford the licensing for the original versions.
Of course.
Yeah.
Like, there's at least three songs that are very recognizable. There's one song that's definitely, like you mentioned, is Duran Duran ripoff. There's another song that sounds like very much like something out of Bruce Springsteen. There's one that sounds tremendously like something like an Elvis Presley song. All of them are like ripoffs. They're like a couple of notes off. So they're not really Duran Duran or Bruce Springsteen or Elvis or whatever. It's fucking hilarious.
Yeah, but it is good because that is a way of getting a certain sound you want without paying for it. So I understand the thought behind it.
Yeah, but it's also like since they didn't change it enough. If they changed it a little bit more, I would say that's clever. But I said, like, dude, I know that's Duran Duran. I know that's this. I know that's Bruce Springsteen. I know this is this. I'm like, what are you doing, mate?
I think what they hope will happen is people, because it's similar, but it isn't quite the same, people think, they've actually got Duran Duran music on this, and they actually think it is the original version.
I love how he gets revived from the ice. He's in Alaska.
Yeah.
He's got the thing. He has his hand up there, and he's twitching his hand in the ice block. And then randomly, once he's been discovered by seemingly the president sends this excavation out to Alaska, apparently, right? And I love it. His finger, the Captain America's struck on the box, he twitches a bit, and then just explodes out of the ice.
I have got a clip if you want me to play it.
Do it.
The synth's like ba 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 ba.
It's so triumphant. And then, all right, so he gets out, he breaks out of the ice, and when he breaks out of the ice, he just walks out. He's in the middle of Alaska, by the way. He walks out with a whole bunch of people. He doesn't talk to anyone, he just fucking leaves.
Yeah, he's straight back on it, isn't he? Straight back to fighting Nazis straight away. He's like, I've got to find them.
Once the news travels very fucking quickly in this world, because the moment he breaks out of the ice, it's world news. Italy knows about it. The president knows about it. Everyone knows about it. To the point that it then leads to a whole bunch of mess.
Well, Red Skull reads it in a newspaper, doesn't he? And he basically says, he talks to his daughter, and it's like this.
It's here.
Who, Baba?
Captain America.
Captain America.
I'm Dracula Blair.
Can I count on my daughter to take care of this for me?
Absolutely.
So, she then sort of sends her... she goes along to find him with her goons. And there's a scene where they're in a chopper and the music is so brilliant. This is the bad guys in chopper music.
Do it.
The way you make me feel.
It's Michael Jackson. It's Michael Jackson.
So that's this. Yeah, basically they're sort of high up, sort of stalking Cap, and that music's playing. But I don't know what about you, but they kind of made the Nazis a bit too cool. They're like they're in shades and stuff, and like there's like he's the daughter, Red Skull's daughter, and the other woman ridiculously hot as well, and they're like really really cool, and you're like it's just they're more like they're a lot cooler than the good guys.
Pretty much, they all look young, hot, good looking. They're all into the latest fashion. They all know the latest music. They're all very much in it, right? While all of Captain America and everyone else is like, oh, they're all fuddy duddies. Like Ned Beatty, who's the reporter, who is just this, he's the only ally you know, and just when that happens, by the way, there is the moment the newspaper thing happened, right? Yeah. The newspaper scene. Right, with that, and to jump into Ned Beatty in the car and the whole helicopters, right? It's instant. There is no build-up. Suddenly the Italians are there in Canada.
Yeah.
Fighting instantly. There is no build. It just happens.
Yeah, because he just gets there and he saves Cap, doesn't he? But what I love about that is when he's kind of driving off, and it's kind of like they're talking, but like the dialogue fades out as they fade out into the distance. And I don't think they should have done that, because listen to how it sounds.
Get in! Come on!
Who was that shooting at you?
Like, who was that shooting at you? Nazis. And then he actually does say, who are you? But it's like so faint, because he's already off into the distance. But I understand the sound mix, you kind of want to make it realistic, but you need to hear the lines that they're saying.
I know, you barely heard Nazi as it goes past. I laugh when I heard that. It's like saying, so who, it's like, who the hell were they? Nazis. But it's like really soft, like Nazis.
Yeah. It's great.
This next scene is really, really funny for me. It's the scene where Captain America and Ned Beatty are in the car. And Ned Beatty is trying to get as much information as possible out of Captain America to figure out who the Red Skull is. But here's the thing, that one thing no one explains to him yet. No one explains what year it is.
Yeah. He's just so confused. And he does that thing where he wants to kind of do it his own way, doesn't he? So he kind of says, I'm going to be sick. So he gets pull the car over, and he gets out. And this is like something that would be like in a comedy kind of slapstick kind of show, or like comedy show. He gets is it the character called Sam? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. He basically gets him to come out to see if he's okay. And he goes, and he runs back in the car and sort of drives off and leaves him there.
And this is the thing. He doesn't do this once.
No.
He does it twice.
It's like the gag wasn't funny the first time. Don't do it again.
He does it again later.
He decides to go home, doesn't he? And we get one of my favourite montages, him travelling home. And it's the music is absolutely perfect.
It is.
Long, long time ago.
The chorus is so great when it gets to it. So basically, you've just got like shots of traveling shots and stuff of him just like, he's on a train at one point, he's on like in the car.
At one point, he's in a trench coat, but he's got the Captain American outfit underneath it.
I got to find that special girl to warm this heart of mine.
It's so on the nose, it's ridiculous. It's so bad.
Memories of you, girl.
This is the Bruce Springsteen one I was thinking of. Thinking of, this is ridiculous. What are we doing here? What? How is it happening? It's so on the nose.
You're right, mate. It is Bruce Springsteen. It's like trying to be Bruce, isn't it? You're trying to be the boss, but you can't just try and be the boss.
But the thing is as well, the lyrics are all so on the nose in that scene. It's like, I'm a loss, I'm alone, I'm trying to find the love of my life, I don't know where I've been, I don't know where I am. And I'm like, dude, show don't tell, buddy.
Memories of you, girl. I just... I was killing myself laughing so loud when I first saw that bit. It's really good.
But I busted. It was so good. I love one bit as well in that scene when during that whole bit is where he's at the beach and he finds Bernie and Steve like on the side of the pier, and then suddenly he turns around and sees two punks. It's like, hey buddy, you know, the punks go, hey man, you got any cigarettes? He runs out, and then he literally sees this woman in the tiniest bikini in an American banner bikini. Yeah. And I love, as he's running, he turns around a bit and literally takes a gander at her butt as she runs.
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty good. And so he's basically just trying to get his way home, and he arrives back at his old house, isn't it? And I think Bernie like sort of kept that house and lived in it, didn't she? Just in case he happened to be not dead and he's going to come home. And they basically, she's now like, she has moved on, but you know, it took her a while. She's like 16 years or something. She waited for him.
Jesus.
Basically, she's now married and she's had a kid. And there's this exchange between old Bernie and Cap that's like this.
I was 38.
So melodramatic again.
Children before it was too late.
You waited for me? 16 years?
Oh, Steve, I feel so old and ugly and look at you.
I can't help being hot.
I can't help that I'm just frozen in ice for nearly, I don't know how many years.
Just wasn't meant to be.
I love that how it ends. That it's like, oh, Bernie, I guess it just wasn't meant to be.
Oh, it's like, you know, that's that plot line done. The whole Bernie plot line is done now, basically. But then, somehow, this, again, speeds up, fucking speeds, because then, right after that, because, you know, Red Skull is disappointed that, that his daughter didn't get Captain America that time round.
Yeah.
And is eavesdropping. So she's eavesdropping in a wired phone call that she has on the president's phone line that then says, I know where Captain America is, because Ned Beatty says, oh, I know where Captain America is. He's gone to his girlfriend's house, to California. And I love it. The Italian woman then goes and says, it's like, Captain America's in California. Literally, two cuts. One, on a plane, now they're in California. It's no...
Yeah, and similar to the bad guys in Choppers, we now get bad guys in Jet, which is like this.
Yes!
Hold the jet. Captain America's in California.
Yeah!
I love it.
You get this cheesy, like, rock, blues rock for that. And the visual for that is just... a load of Nazis in Ray-Ban sunglasses just looking cool in a jet.
Yeah, and they're looking really posery. Like, it's like a photo shoot. They're sitting down, they're looking forward, they're in different poses, they're having cocktails in their hand. They're living the good life. Like, they're living the good life. This is supposed to be the emotional crux of the movie. I'm going down. I'm calming myself down. But this is the emotional crux of the movie, because Bernie gets killed now. Spoilers. But Bernie gets killed. So does Jack, who happens to be her husband, who we barely get to know, like, at all.
Who cares? It's like, just kill him off. It doesn't matter.
Right.
Actually, no, he doesn't get killed off, does he? He just gets injured.
He gets horribly, horribly injured.
Yeah.
So basically, the reporter goes over to Bernie's house, right? And it's, and you open up the door, because this is the thing, because of how fucking quickly the Italians seem to be over away from Italy to goddamn California, you think that the door opens, knocks. And Jack's like, Jack, who's sitting there being the perfect husband, being a slob watching TV. he's about to get up. And she's like, no, I'll get it. Goes to the door. And your brain instantly thinks, oh, okay, it's the bad guys. Although you're thinking to yourself, like, that's fucking quick as the bad guys. You think, oh, maybe it's Captain America, because Captain America's hiding out with their daughter. Mm. Okay. And it's like, okay, all right. The reporter opens up the door and says, like, you got to believe me. It's like, look, I know, I need to know anything you know about Captain America, whatever it is. And then instantly, out of the blue, the Italians come out of nowhere, kills him, shoots Jack, and then horribly, horribly murders Bernie. Again, all within a span of like a minute.
Yeah, it's pretty brutal.
So Sharon and Captain America, hearing it over the phone while Captain America's having like relapses and remembering everything, goes over and she just has a breakdown.
There's like so much overacting, but it's great. It's kind of really sort of passionate and stuff. She's like really going for it. It's trying to get her Oscar for that particular
bit. I know, right?
But yeah, I remember that the bit where they were, basically she was teaching Captain America about what happened, was like history and stuff, wasn't it? Yeah, that's what they were doing. Mm. And then she just hears about her mother, so he goes to see what's happening and just goes berserk like you would do. But
yeah, but it's just like that happens. Then instantly we're cut to the hospital, where they're now in the hospital keeping an eye on Jack.
Mm.
Yeah, keeping an eye on Dad. And then again, this happens so goddamn quickly, like we don't see this. There is he's flipping on the. Sharon goes like, "Oh, I know what he'll like." He puts on like a game show, and then it's like, "Special report: the president's now been kidnapped."
That is interrupting Wheel of Fortune, isn't it? Like,
yeah, it's like we interrupt Wheel of Fortune to say that the president of the United States has been kidnapped in his Rome hotel room. Like, well, this would have been nice to have seen.
Yeah,
we could have liked to have seen that. Instead of just telling us over a news report.
Yeah, it's just like, again, it's just to save money, isn't it?
There is no time. There's no time for bull. There's no time for anything. Things just happen quickly because we have so much to cover. Literally after this point, Captain America and Sharon go to the diner, find the underground facility where he was transformed to Captain America to get the diary, and then they have a fight with more Italian Nazis who now happen to know that was the base with that. Just happens.
Yeah, because basically they think that Vaselli might have had some details on the real name of Red Skull, so they can find out, track him down. But yeah, one of the bad guys fights with Cap, and it's like this.
Yeah.
Where is he? Where's the Red Skull?
I don't know nothing. None of us do. Oh! We get our orders from the Red Skull's daughter.
Just chucks him down a vent.
It's
like he scream lasts for ages as well. It's like,
It's really funny, that bit, because the whole fight, this seems to me like this is a time where you can really show off Captain America's fighting skills, because we've barely seen it, right? But the whole thing is done in the dark.
I don't know about you, but you can hardly see anything that's going on in that scene. And I know it's kind of like, I don't know whether they were trying to be like Batman 89 at that particular point, because it had that bit where he grabs him and he pulls him towards him. It's a bit like I want you to tell all your friends about me. It reminds me a little bit about that bit, but I don't know whether they actually were influenced by 89, because they were kind of making it at the same time that film was being made. Probably.
I kind of feel like this movie, I think they basically hid the fact that maybe they didn't have Matt Salinger knows how to really pull off fake fighting, or they didn't have enough money for a good stunt double.
Yeah.
So they basically like just did most of the movie in the dark, that bit in the dark, so they could hide all the bits. Because there was a shot, which I'm convinced might have been a case, where I think Captain America jumps up, bounces off a pipe, and then does like a clothesline from above and smacks someone down. But I couldn't fucking tell. Yeah. I didn't know what that was.
Apparently, they did consider having two actors, one to play Steve Rogers and one to play Captain America. But yeah, in the, ended up going with just someone who could play both. Apparently, Matt Salinger can play both.
He's not too bad.
I don't like it's not the worst part of the movie. His performance is all right. I think he's, and he definitely looks like a Captain America. I can imagine in my head he's kind of got the right look. He's good for a kind of a B movie version of this character. I don't think he's that bad.
So they fight. Captain America escapes. Captain America and Sharon escape. They get in the car. They find out, okay, so we can't find out where he is, but it seems we know where she used to be. So the fort, something, something.
Yeah.
And says, looks like we're going to Italy. And then we get another quick one, like, we're going to Italy. They're instantly in a mini in the middle of Rome. Like, instantly. Like, there's no... Yeah. Wow, that was quick. We had to get there quickly. Fuck it, we're going to Rome. Let's go. And this is where we start uncovering more stuff and... You know, the Red but Captain America finds about the history of Red Skull and the fact that he was a child experiment, stuff like that, and everything else.
And they get the recording, don't they, soon?
Yeah.
Yeah, from that. Yeah, why was it recorded, that?
I don't know. I mean,
the family was playing the piano. I guess they were trying to record the piano playing, and then it ended up recording the whole thing. But back then, you wouldn't record stuff like that, I don't think.
I don't know. This is literally like a this is a plot device. It's just there just to be a plot device. This does lead to eventually they go back to Italy trying to figure out what all this means. Maybe they find out who it is. But then they get this one I kind of liked, but I did find it quite funny as well. They get attacked in a cafe, don't they?
Yeah. I can't remember much about that scene though.
It's kind of funny. It basically, you get all these hot women, basically all the sexy, good looking Italian fascists. They notice ooh, that's Captain America, and then they go and just start shooting him. Right, they start shooting him, and so throws like a couple of tables and chairs. They hide from the bullets, and then Sharon and them just start running. They go down all the alleyways in the cars. And it's one bit where they're all being chased by cars. They're being chased by cars, basically, because they're all like in motorbikes and in cars and shit. And there's a bit where there's a bunch of kids in the middle of the road for no reason. And so Captain America just picks them both up, puts them on his shoulder, runs through the middle of a tunnel, and a car crashes.
Yeah, and the kids as well, they're not like reacting to quite a scary situation. They're kind of just playing with a ball in the street, like sort of rolling it back to each other. And it's like, get out of the bloody road, Jesus.
it's so casual. It's like, as well, like, bad parenting, by the way. Never be in the middle of a road. Play ball in the middle of a road. Anyway, there's a whole bunch of other bits like that. But then eventually they're being chased down. And the chasing looks very sloppy in terms of how it's edited, because there's loads of wide shots. There's no real close-ups. Loads of wide shots of them running from alleyway to alleyway, being chased by motorbikes and cars and shit. And then they get a bunch of bicycles.
Well, no, it's one. He basically has her on his knee or something, doesn't he? On one bicycle, and he just looks like comical. It doesn't look like serious at all. It's like
it doesn't look like something that Captain America should be doing, right? And then he realizes the bike has no brakes, and then just drives off a cliff
into the sea. Yeah,
into the sea. Which conveniently, that's how they escape. But also, that is incredibly fucking reckless.
Yeah. It's like, half the time, Captain America isn't very successful, is he? In the way that he's like, sort of... And he's not... And another thing, he's not in the suit enough, is he?
Well, to be honest, he's not in the suit enough, but also looking at the suit, I'm kind of glad he's not in the suit that much.
I'm guessing... I don't know whether that was intentional because the director didn't like the fact that it was like... The blue, the bright blue in like red, white, and blue and stuff. I don't know, but
Or maybe it's the fact that Matt Saran just saying, look, I'm not getting in that suit again. You know how fucking hot it is in there. No, less suit. Less suit, the better.
I'm gonna question a psychopath.
The Orbee has nothing to fear.
You're in a...
It almost feels like in a weird way, because again, they're being tracked again. And I love the line. It's like saying they're being tracked again. And I think she says, what? Oh my God, I'm having the worst luck. No, it's not luck, mate. It's just a matter of plot convenience. You are constantly being chased by the plot.
Yeah, and she basically tries to divert them to her attention, so that he basically, like, how does she get him out of the car? I can't remember.
But just she locks him out.
Yeah, and she ends up like driving, continuing on, and they follow her and capture her, don't they?
And it's funny how you can tell she's got captured. Not because suddenly her necklace is on the ground. Like, Captain America keeps walking down the road and finds her necklace. It's like, damn you!
But when she's driving down the road, they're waiting for her the other side, and they're all like posed on the car with sunglasses on. Again, like the cool Nazis.
The cool Italian fascists. They look cool, man. Like, they want you to be involved. Like, they want you to be in their gang, and everyone to be. They all look like fashion models.
Yeah.
They all look too cool. It's a problem. By this point, now, finally, Captain America's on his own. He gets in the suit and then goes to try to save the president, who apparently might die from some kind of. This barely explained, but some kind of injection / laser beam? I missed this part completely. I never understood this bit.
Oh, is it they're trying to put him through that process of like getting that implant in him so they can control him?
Yeah, but it feels like the implant, they don't explain how the implant works or what is done, barely, if anything. So it's like his gun. But here's a weird thing as well, it's like saying, Captain, you know, they could have done this the moment they arrived, but Red Skull say, I'll be back in 20 minutes.
Well, it takes a while to work, doesn't it?
It's like, we can't do this immediately. We have to get him the serum. It's like, conveniently, it takes him 20 minutes. And enough time for Captain America to come in and try and save him.
What I do love, though, is when they take off the present to lock him up in his cell. Conveniently, there's some like toxic like poison nearby for the president to like quickly pick up, so he can use it to break out of his cell later on and put it on the bars. It's great. It's just so close to him. Why would you put like corrosive chemicals right next to him that he could use?
Because at the end of the day, this movie doesn't care. This movie wants you to get through shit quickly. It wants you to say, like, right, it's all, this whole movie for me feels like plot convenience, the movie. Because, yeah, Rhodes and stuff. He ends up hiding and starting to run away, and he's being chased. And then conveniently, he stopped on the top of this really cool-looking castle, by the way. Wherever they shot the castle bit, really, really cool.
Oh, looking. Yeah, I love all the stuff in the castle. It looks so good. I really like it, yeah.
See, this is where I think half the money went. I think I'm convinced. It just looks so cool. And then, so Red Skull goes and finds the president, and says like, "No, we're going to inject you now, whatever it is, right?" And conveniently, because I don't actually think that the president knew this. It's like the president goes and says like, "You need me to live in order for the procedure to work." Yes. Well, duh. He says like, "Goodbye." Jumps.
Yeah. And then conveniently, just like he's caught by Captain America, isn't he?
The president had no fucking idea, didn't he? Like, do you think? Because I didn't think. I think America, he's like, I'm going to die. I'm going to die honorably. And just out of coinkadink, Captain America's underneath to grab him and save him.
And then when he just after he saved him, there's this little bit of piece of dialogue.
Thanks.
Don't mention it, sir. Steve Rogers.
We've met.
I don't see how. You mean you were the little boy?
I told you! I told you!
For a long time.
Gee whiz.
I told you. I told you he fucking somehow. So you're the boy. It's like, well, somehow he then. He must have known.
Yeah, that is really shit writing. They shouldn't have put that in. I know he's like meant to be super powered, but I don't think he's got that kind of power. He's just strong, isn't he? And like, I do like when the president meets up with the traitor general, because the general has been working with Red Skull because he wants the president out of the picture because he doesn't like the whole environmental stuff, does he?
Yeah.
So basically, like, he finds him skulking about in the castle trying to escape, and it's quite a funny scene, actually.
It's brilliant.
Mr. President!
President, premises are secure, sir. I'm in command here.
General Fleming.
I don't think you're going to be able to squirm out of this.
Really?
Just punches him.
I love how off guard he is because Mr. President is like, oh, I wasn't expecting to see you here. Like, we found you.
Area secure, sir.
He's like a child. He's like a child that got caught getting cookies from the cookie jar. Yeah. You know? He's like, yeah, Mom, I was putting the cookies back.
But I think, like, pretty much quite quickly after that sort of scene is the big confrontation again between Captain America and Red Skull, and they have a pretty cool fight, actually. But what I love is the standoff kind of situation. There's a bit of dialogue which is like this, and it's I do actually really like this.
I don't know how it is that you are here, or how you remain so unchanged, but it doesn't matter, my brother. Today, you will die. 50 years ago, you were Dr. Vasselli's ridiculous idea. You remain a clownish symbol that no one cares about.
I care.
You care. Then come to me, my brother. Let us see if this heart of yours is stronger than my hate.
I love that. Let's see if your heart is stronger than my hate. I love that. That's a good build-up to a fight, isn't it? Good fighting talk.
It's a good, like, supervillain thing to say. Yeah, like, it's good. And then the fight happens and it's all right.
it's just a bit of, like, slobber knocker kind of punches, isn't it? It's like right hooks and left hooks and kind of like...
Yeah, I mean, like, I mean, Red Skull throws his chair at him. At Captain America. Captain America does a backflip, like several backflips, which is pretty cool. I mean, we've seen slowly that Captain America has like this gymnastic ability now because of the serum. You don't see it enough. So it's kind of random but awesome when he's doing like a double backflip over this chair being thrown, a couple of slobber knocker punches. Sharon's escaped as well. And I love this when Sharon throws a punch, just one bit, and made me laugh really hard because everyone's getting like really reacting to getting punched, right? The president's punching like a goon. Captain America's punching the Red Skull. Everyone's looking great. Sharon punches lady goons.
It's Red Skull's daughter, isn't it?
Daughter. Punching the daughter. Goes for the punch. Like, psh. And one, the punch looks really soft. Two, the reaction from her daughter's like, oh. Oh. She just like fake falls to a wall. Like, oh.
Can I tell you, just say something for a minute? Like, lady fights in films back in the day, like, were shit, weren't they? They made women look crap. Like,
they really did. Like, there were always some standouts. Like, you know, you had, like, but these were women who knew how to fight. Like, we're talking, like, things like Cynthia Ruffrock, or we're talking about the proper women of fighting.
Yeah.
Anyone else? Shit. Fight. So everyone does a fight. They end up going into the bit where, for some reason, now the Red Skull is now escaped. He's run away. He is next to his magical piano, which we're never introduced beforehand, by the way. This is the first time I've ever seen him on the piano.
How amazing is that, like, scene in terms of, like, the way the piano is positioned right high up on a big platform and overlooking the sea? It's like something from a music video, isn't it?
There are bits in this movie where if they had a little bit more money and patience, could have looked really striking. But it falls a bit flat here. With the Red Skull's now there, he's got the piano, He's sulking and being dramatic and tragic, but we never really give him much of an excuse for him to be tragic because we never got any more scenes about him being tragic. So I'm doing tragic a lot because that's how it is. It's him doing, I'm being so sad right now.
Yeah. I mean, I've got the clip of him talking about we're both tragedies.
We are both tragedies. And now I send our tortured souls to rest.
Speak for yourself.
So he just lobs his shield and knocks him off the castle.
And that's the thing, this came out of nowhere. This is supposed to be the end of the fight. Like, so Red Skull is about to launch what seems to be like a nuke or something. He's got like, he's armed and he's detonated.
Yeah, isn't he going to blow up the entire, like, of all Europe or something, I think it is.
It never explains. It's like, it never explains it, but it kind of said, like, I've got a bomb in every place. I will blow everyone up, blah, blah, blah. This was blasé, never pulled up. Captain America throws his shield, like you said, and you heard that. He just falls off a cliff.
Yeah, and it's like a really, really big wide shot, like far away. So you can see the castle, and you can see this little dot falling off the castle.
This one bit that proves to me that I think Matt Salinger must have been done with this movie. Because the moment he does that, you see the pose, he's looking out towards the thing. I'm convinced. And when he does that, he turns around a bit, looks directly into the camera with a bit of a nod, and then walks off. Like, he's kind of done. Like, you can see, like, I'm done with this.
That weird shot where he just looks into camera at the end made me laugh as well. Because I think, why did they do that? It's so silly.
I think it's like, we need to end this movie somehow. We haven't got a proper ending. We don't have a love ending. We don't have anything else. Fudge it. Just give him a look of Captain America ending. And the movie ends with the president saved, Sharon, everyone else is all fine. The end of movie. But do you have the ending song?
Yeah, it's got a little clip like of sort of introducing sort of what's happened to close out, and then it goes into the music.
In Rome today, 116 nations agreed to an environmental protection treaty. In a brief statement after the signing, President Kimball asked that we remember the many people who have gallantly sacrificed all to make our world a better place to live. The president closed his statement with this odd message. To Captain America, wherever he is, we're all back in the fight.
Yeah!
Then you get another Bruce Springsteen-style song closing out the movie.
This is the thing for me. Like,
I'll just leave this going while we talk about it.
Yeah. Thing is, the ending of that, we would have liked to have seen that. Maybe we could have had a scene or two of, you know, the president in front of, like, the United Nations, and he says the thing, and everyone agrees, and they say, like, who's Captain America? And then Captain America's like, so, you see, I'm already writing a better ending for this movie. But it's...
Yeah, a lot of stuff, like we said earlier, it just happens off screen because they just didn't have the money to shoot that bit. I'm convinced. But what's great is the credits. You get a very unusual credit of please respect the environmental kind of like protection of 1990 or something like that.
So weird.
In the credits to support that. That's why I was saying it's like a Captain Planet movie, isn't it?
Crashometer.
Okay, guys, so if this is the first time you're hearing us, this is how we rank our movies. We have something called a trashometer. A trashometer is sort of like, think of it like a thermometer. Thermometer of from how much we can tolerate the bad in this movie, basically. So, first of all, we have Tame. Tame is basically, the movie was boring, there wasn't actually anything fun with it. There's, you know, it's dull more than anything else. Then you've got Tiny Bit Trashy, where we're starting to see there's some nuggets of gold here. It's really, and it's funny, but it doesn't really go full enough into proper enjoyable trashy mode. Then, right in the middle, you have Trash, which is the sweet spot, the golden goose, the ultimate prize of trashy bad movies, right? Where it's got the right balance of everything that you can just enjoy it and go for a ride. You then got Too Trashy. Too Trashy is where we're starting to not enjoy ourselves, but not because it's boring, it's because we're getting angry at it, we're getting annoyed at it, but not enough yet. Like, we're there, but it ain't bad. And then at the very top, we have Torture. Torture is a movie that is so bad, so terrible, that it becomes a slog, unenjoyable, just the worst. You're almost having a mental breakdown watching the movie. So, yeah. Basically then, let's start off with you, Ed. Where do you think this falls on the trashometer?
To me, I don't really have to think about it too much, because I enjoy the movie, and I acknowledge its flaws and its trashiness. For me, it's trash. So it's in the middle mark. It's like... It could be a little bit better. So perhaps going the lower end of trash. So just, you know, perhaps just above tiny bit trashy and going into trash.
And do you know what? I was going to say that. It's either going to be high end of a little too trashy or just the lower bottom end of trash. Now, this doesn't really match up entirely to some of the corkers that would fall under this category. Like, I feel like if this was going to have a battle between things like Miami Connection, The Room, Barbed Wire, and all these other movies, Captain America 1990 would be destroyed.
Oh,
right?
Absolutely. But I'm just going in with my opinion. It's just kind of like the fact that I really enjoy it still, and I have a lot of fun with it. And even though it's bad, it doesn't ruin it for me, you know?
Yeah, so I think, you know what, I feel, for me, if I was going to put it, I would put it on the very high end of tiny bit trashy. Yeah. Like, just like you, like, just a pinnacle, just a bit before trash. Because I feel like trash has to be, like, a moment where I'm like, will I go back and watch this movie again? And I don't think I will, but I will definitely remember some of the funnier moments in this movie, and I can talk to people about it. It's like, do you remember when Captain America just broke out of the ice and just fucking left in the middle of Alaska? Or do you remember this bit? Or remember that bit? I grew a lot of moments here. So I will put it under there. So where could we go under the consensus? Should we put it under low, low end of trash, or should we put it on the high end of tiny bit trashy?
Maybe on the high end of tiny bit trashy. Okay.
Thank you very much. Brilliant. So that was it for this episode. Honestly, I had a lot of fun doing this one, and it's kind of making me think that maybe further down the line we've got to do more superhero movies. We have to do more superhero movies.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, I'm really excited about taking on some more.
So yeah, I think we might come back to superheroes at some point. We definitely might have to come back, throw another superhero movie every so often. And I think anyone out there, if you can recommend me other famously bad or funny superhero movies, you know, find us on social medias, like on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. Find us on there. Give us some suggestions. Maybe even write them down in some reviews on all the social media outlets. So because we're on Spotify, we're on Apple Podcasts, we're on Acast, we're on Buzzsprout. We're slowly taking over the world, just how Red Skull wanted it to be.
Yeah, just all the platforms. And talking to superheroes as well, I've just released my Judge Dredd 25th anniversary VHS review.
Oh, so, that was fun.
Yeah, just so we're getting the comic book content out at the moment, aren't we? You know.
Yeah, and also on the trash tapes, we've got a video coming out either soon or as it comes out now, as it were, of Japanese Spider-Man, as we react to Japanese Spider-Man, which I am dead excited for. Yeah. Oh boy.
I might even do Captain Planet on Enigmatic Play on the stream, the Throwback Thursday.
Oh, that would be fantastic. Oh, that would be brilliant.
So we just
like
keep that superhero theme going over the summer, perhaps, yeah.
Keep it going, because, you know, if cinemas are not going to be open properly and some of the big blockbuster movies are not really going to be out there, we're going to have our own super blockbuster summer. Damn it.
Definitely.
So, yeah, that's it. Thank you guys very much for joining us. Remember to like, share, subscribe to all the stuff that we're on. You can find us from there. So... until next time, keep an eye on your trash. There might be some treasure in there. See you guys next time.
See you guys.
Thank you for listening to this podcast episode and hope you enjoyed it. If you did, please share it around with movie lovers you know, maybe add a star rating or write a good review. All of this helps with the algorithm and provides us with more opportunities to reach the ears to a whole new bunch of bad film fanatics. Want to find out more about us? Then head over to our socials where we provide sneak peeks and up-to-date news on everything nostalgic and trashy. You can find our Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter pages in the description. So please, follow us. See you next time, cinephiles.